ball is high, it is far, it is gone to win the game.
The Mets are on their way back.
World champions for the 27th time.
Home plate for all things Major League Baseball. This is the Nosebleeds Podcast on WFUV Sports.
Back at you from the Nosebleeds for another edition of WFUV's podcast for all things baseball. Joe Henry talking to you from around the base paths today alongside Lauren Mondarulli and Bradley Byrne. We have a ton to dig into today, but first, and Lauren, I'll start with you. How have you been? Have you been catching any good baseball this summer?
I've been great. I actually just wrapped up my minor league baseball summer internship this past weekend, so I've gotten a lot of baseball. My team was personally not the best, but it was fun being there, and I caught the Yankees and the Mets when I was home and not working. So it's been overall a really good summer for baseball with me.
Awesome. Bradley, you've been taking in any good baseball this summer?
Yeah, actually, I just got back from the Met game about a half hour ago, so it was insane to see Jesse Winker's first home run as a Met, and to see it to be a walk-off is pretty cool.
We're about to dig into that. I'm excited for it because that was, one heck of a play. So entering into the home stretch here for 2024, which is pretty hard to fathom, feels like the season's kind of been a blur, and I mean that in a good way, but it has been going by really fast. Most teams are gearing up for a postseason run or a postseason push, both the Mets and Yankees in that category. Some juicy wildcard races that we'll jump into today. Also, no shortage of headlines surrounding the New York teams. We'll talk about that as well. Amidst all this intensity at such like an inflection point in the season, we also have some really cool events around the majors. This past weekend was Players Weekend, which I felt like was pretty much as big a success as it's ever been, which was awesome to see. As I thought the social media content, they knocked it out of the park with that. The hats that they had, the custom hats and the bats were great. And we also got to see the Little League Classic between the Yankees and Tigers in Williamsport, which everything from that looked brilliant, including an awesome game. I did see a video where a kid on one of the Little League teams says that he was most excited to meet Javi Baez, which was very concerning. But otherwise, it was pretty much everything you'd love to see about baseball. It's the present and the future generations of the sport connecting in a place so historic like Williamsport. And it was also a game with a Parker Meadows walk-off to give the Tigers a win. And speaking of walk-off, the Mets have done it twice in three nights. And Bradley, you got a front row seat to that one today. I mean, we saw Francisco Alvarez tee off on one on Monday. And I thought to myself, that's probably the craziest pimp job we've seen since the Jose Bautista era. And now Jesse Winker one-ups him. And you were able to watch that. What did you make of it?
The stadium went absolutely crazy. I just want to go back to the Alvarez home run. The fact that he didn't even look at the ball. As soon as he hit it, he looked at the dugout and knew it was a home run. That's just the definition of absolute savage. Like, he didn't even look at the ball, not one bit. He was just hyped up. And to see Alvarez finally break his 38 at-bat homer jet was pretty cool to see, because the last time he hit a home run was against the Braves. So to see him finally get a home run is just really nice to see.
Yeah, I felt the same exact way. Not only did Alvarez need that for his confidence and his ego, but the Mets needed that win. The first game of the series is obviously a very important one. And then they had the lead going to the seventh in that game, and then they lost. They tied it up. So I was watching that game, and I saw them tie it up, and I left. I didn't want to watch it anymore. My dad stayed out and watched it and called me back out like the ninth inning. He's like, you got to come watch this right now. And I saw the replay. It was just incredible. But, you know, this is really great for Alvarez. It helps him remember who he is, how he can impact this team, and what this team could make of this for the rest of the run in this regular season.
Yeah, I mean, this is a Mets team that has really done a great job of riding their highs this year. And I think, unfortunately, the same can be said for their lows. It's really been a streaky club. You know, the first couple months of the year, it was brutal. And then they got really hot in the Grimace era. And now it feels like we're having a little bit of a return to form the past few nights. And one thing that's been really concerning about them the entire year is their ability to perform against some of the better ball clubs, postseason clubs. I mean, they had this really easy stretch of games this past month that they really were unable to deliver on to the level that you would hope for. And as such, they're not quite in the wild card three spot right now. The Braves still have the edge over them. But this was really a change for them in the ability to beat a team that's really contending for a World Series like the Orioles. I think is something they're going to be they're going to have to do if they're going to want to be able to push into the playoffs here, especially when the team that you're trailing is the Braves. I believe they play them just one more time this season. And really, as I said, they had that easy stretch in the schedule, but in their next, 10 or so series before the season ends, they've got to play Arizona, Boston, Philly, Atlanta, as I said, Milwaukee. All those teams are either in the playoffs or contending for it and are either as good as them or maybe better. They're going to need to deliver against those teams in a way that they weren't quite able to do when they had that stretch of games against, teams like the Nationals and the Rockies, and other bottom of the barrel teams, the Marlins, where they weren't quite able to execute to the level that you would hope they would be able to, in a wild card push. But what do you think between the inconsistency of their pitching, and their lineup, which I'll get to in a minute? I'm interested in talking a little bit about righty lefty with them, and Jesse Winker definitely plays a part of that. But Lauren, what do you think about their odds as they embark on this really hard stretch in their schedule to try and make a playoff push?
I was kind of doubting the Mets, and then I saw them win today. And I am a firm believer that good teams can play good teams and win, but they struggle against the bad teams. We've seen that time and time again. That's just like a theme in sports, I think. So I'm not too worried for the Mets, considering they're able to push the boundaries. They're able to get these walk-offs in important moments of the games and important moments of the season, as we're talking at the end of the season. But I'm a little concern for their confidence levels, where I think this Orioles series definitely did help. They're gonna struggle, they're gonna face these good pitchers, and their five-man rotation, I don't mind most of it, but what worries me is Jose Quintana. I don't like him in that rotation. I don't think he's performed well at all this season at all, especially since August he's lost all of his four starts. So that's just, you can't automatically think you're gonna lose a game because of your starter. You got to figure out a way to make sure that, like, you're comfortable with your starter, your offense is comfortable with the starter, and then you have your bullpen to back you up. And that's just like how you win in baseball. But overall, I am a firm Mets believer. I just think they need to figure out what works for them and then what didn't, and then only go with what works for them from here on out. Because they, Joe, as you said, they've had their highs and they've had their lows. They figured out their way out of their highs. So they just need to figure out of their lows, I'm sorry, and back into their highs. So they just need to figure out what that was and stick with it for the rest of the series season.
But yeah, I'm gonna have to agree with you on that. I feel like that the Mets winning this series is huge because we know that they can beat really good playoff teams and not just, like the other like the bad teams. Like they've obviously struggled with the bad teams, but now like they winning, sorry, them winning this series is huge because now they have to go up against the Padres and the Diamondbacks, who have been arguably the two best teams since the All-Star break. So hopefully that them winning this series can give them the confidence that they need to win these series. Because although as much as I want to be a delusional Mets fan and say that they can easily make the playoffs, which by the way, I did say on Nosebleeds in June that July would be a huge month for them, and they went from five games back to being the fourth seed as their max. So I just wanted to take credit for that. But I just think that at the end of the day, it's going to come down to the Mets Braves series. In my opinion, whoever wins that series in September is getting that last playoff spot. I think, regardless of what happens this season, that's going to be the biggest series for either team. Who the team that wins that series, in my opinion, is going to claim that sixth playoff spot in the NL.
Yeah, that's definitely the one to circle on the calendar. That's the second to last series of the year. And between the two teams contending for that final playoff spot. And as you said, I mean, it looks like with the surgence of the Padres and the Diamondbacks, those first two spots are taken up. Obviously, the Phillies pretty much have a stranglehold on the NL East. So really, there's only that sixth spot up for grabs, and it's going to be between the Mets and the Braves. And the Braves have been, underwhelming all year. Of course, there have been injuries that have really derailed their hopes, but they still hang on to what's now, I believe, a 1.5 game lead over the Mets. And the issue for me is with the schedule, the difficulty in the schedule the Mets have coming up. They're going to need to sustain that to a level in which they still have this 2-game gap or less against the Braves, so that series, if they were to win the series or sweep, they could potentially move up a game or catapult them in the standings for the wild card. I just have trouble seeing, given how good the teams the Mets are about to play, them catapulting the Braves before they even get to that series, because they're going to have to get through, D-backs, Red Sox, Phillies, Brewers, Padres. And just shifting a little bit, one thing I wanted to talk about as soon as we saw that Jesse Winker homer today, it made me think about this interesting situation the Mets have in their lineup, which it seems that they've really figured it out in a big way. But their one concern that I see that's pretty glaring is there's an imbalance in between the righty and lefty hitters, right? You have Lindor, who's a switch hitter. Otherwise, you have Jeff McNeil and Brandon Nimmo as lefties. Everyone else on their roster is a righty. Jesse Winker enters the situation. He's a lefty, walks it off today. We see his first homer in a Mets uniform. I feel like he could be a big factor in this playoff push. And Bradley, I'll go to you first. What do you think Winker can do here? And do you think that maybe he could usurp a guy like Harrison Bader in the starting lineup, to get the majority of those starts and bring more balance to the lineup as a lefty bat?
Exactly. I was just going to say that because I feel like not just like this year's, but throughout the entire season, the lefty hitters have been far better for the Mets. So I feel like now that you have Winker, who's a good lefty, he should really replace Bader on that lineup. As much as I like Bader, I'm a huge Bader guy, but he just hasn't been good at all this season. I feel like that they should put Winker in, whether it's towards the bottom of the lineup or you want to put him higher up. I definitely think he should be starting for the rest of the season. And today was a prime example of why.
I'm in the same exact boat. As soon as I saw that they were pinch hitting for Harrison Bader and I saw a lefty come up to the plate, I was like, oh, this is going to be good. And I'm so happy I was right. I'm really liking what I saw from him. I think it was great. Was he the first batter in the ninth inning, right? I forgot that part. Yeah. Okay. So that was just such a great moment in Queens as well for a great memory for Jesse Winker. And you want to keep that like excitement going through September and then going into October, hopefully, and Jesse Winker brings that to the Mets lineup.
No, absolutely. My only concern would be, Winker is profiles more of a like a corner outfielder. Bader, of course, has brings more versatility. He can play center field. So my concern would be, when you have Winker starting, who's playing in center? Probably Brandon Nimmo. That's maybe a little bit of a drop off from Bader defensively, but certainly an upgrade offensively all around, and it gives you a more balanced lineup, adding another lefty with Winker. And yeah, I mean, the other main asterisk that I think everyone's had for the Mets this year, it's pitching in general, but also more specifically looking into the bullpen. I think there's been a big resurgence in the past few days with that bullpen, one that's had plenty of questions surrounding it, and really Edwin Diaz coming back to form for the first time. Obviously missed all of last year, had the suspension earlier in the year. He feels like he's finally picking up steam. He pitched today. Bradley, what did you see from him?
Honestly, I'm just glad to see that. I feel like ever since the suspension, Edwin Diaz has been in his best form that he's been in all season. Just I was holding my breath that entire top of the ninth inning. I was just praying, please just retire this side, because I knew that after the once the Mets were going to go back to hitting, I knew it was going to be the top of the lineup. Let's just say if Winker didn't, hit that home run, I had confidence that the Mets would win. I was just praying that the Orioles wouldn't score. Because I knew that if they scored, I didn't think the Mets really had a chance. I don't think they were going to score two runs, in my opinion.
I think that their bullpen has come around this season. Earlier in the season, obviously, they were struggling a lot. But with Jose Buhto continuing to put up like really good numbers in the bullpen, and then Edwin Diaz coming back into his form that we saw a few years ago before his injury and everything, I'm feeling very confident in the Mets bullpen. And I think that working with the starting pitchers and then obviously the offense doing their thing as well, they have a good chance of staying where they are right now, maybe even going ahead, as I said before.
Yeah, I mean, the Mets, as I said, have been a team of ups and downs all season, and they're riding it up now. The question is this going to be a plateau before they go on a downslope, or is this the start of an even bigger upslope? And obviously, the hope is the latter with them, because they've been a great story all year. And I think, I'm not a Mets fan, Lauren. I don't think you're a Mets fan either, but I think, I kind of root for them. They're one of my favorite teams to watch, and to root for. They're like, just an enjoyable team, and I think that shows itself with something like the walk off today. I mean, the crowd is just phenomenal. These are fans that deserve playoff baseball. I can't imagine how great that atmosphere was, Bradley. But yeah, we just talked about Edwin Diaz and about how the Mets bullpen is kind of coming around a little bit. And another team for which bullpen concerns have been kind of the talk of the summer has been the Yankees. And they're currently amidst a three-game skid. Who would have thought? And there's a lot of places where they look to that, to place blame for that skid. And obviously, the lineup's one place to go, and we'll talk plenty about that. But I did want to talk first about the bullpen and the Clay Holmes situation. He was nasty last night in the inning of relief, and clearly he shows that with the stuff he has. But the night prior, a blown save. And it's just that inconsistency where you see the skill ceiling that he has, but his execution, the consistency of it just isn't there. And it's possibly a thing where it's a high pressure thing, right? You have guys who have awesome stuff like Clay Holmes, but you put them in the ninth in a tie game. We've seen time after time this season where, despite how great his stuff is, he's been hit. As a Red Sox fan, I've seen it plenty this year. Thankfully, he's blown like three saves to us, which it's been awesome for me to see, but for Yankees fans, it has to be cause for concern. Boone committed to him as a closer the other night. They asked about him. They're always asking about him. He said he's the guy. And I was wondering, Lauren, you could start. What do you think about Clay Holmes? Do you think that that closer role is his, or do you think that there's another guy in the bullpen that you'd prefer them to start going to in those high leverage situations?
This has been a theme in like my household. We're a big Yankees fans in here. I do not like Clay Holmes in the closing position. He is such a streaky player, and that is just not a trait you want in your closer. Like you said, he has his moments where he seems like he's the greatest player that has ever played the sport. And it's like, wow, I'm so glad he's in my bullpen. He gets the 1-2-3 and everyone's happy. But then you blink and the next game you're like pacing around in front of your TV because Clay Holmes is coming in and the Yankees only have a one run lead, and now you're going to lose the game because he walks, he gives up a double, and then all of a sudden the game's over. I saw, where was it? Okay, I think after last night he has the most blown saves by a Yankee in a single season since Dave Rigetti had 13 in 1987, which is kind of insane since you want to not do that, and that's his only job is to pitch in the ninth and get the 1-2-3. And I hate blaming players because it's not, slumps happen, highs happen, lows happen, and it's just part of the game. So there are times where it's not his fault. The defensive side has a lot to do with it as well. I've seen plenty of times this season where Alex Verdugo and Anthony Volpe misplay something and the tying run or even the go-ahead run scores and the game's over because they misplay the ball. And obviously that blame is on them. My issue comes back to Clay Holmes with that because why is a runner on second base with no outs in the ninth inning when Clay Holmes should have got him struck out because he had an 0-2 count on him, but instead he gave up a double. Like that's just the streakiness coming back. And I want to keep seeing him in the bullpen. I think his stuff is really good. It's just not ninth inning good, closer good. And I'd like to see him like maybe the eighth inning, maybe him and Luke Weaver could switch up seventh or eighth man. And then maybe put in Tommy Canley in the ninth inning. He has been shown time and time again that he's a trusted player and that he could work in high leverage situations and help the Yankees win those games that they need to win.
Honestly, I think the simple thing, they should have gotten rid of him. He's been too streaky all season. I really think they should have just traded him at the trade deadline. The fact that he might actually make Yankees history in a bad way is pretty concerning. I think, just to put it simply, they should have gotten rid of Gleyber Torres and Clay Holmes at the trade deadline. I am not fans of them, not one bit. I just think they're
Either.
I'm a Yankees hater. Sorry, I know your whole household is Yankees fans, but I just don't see any upside in Gleyber Torres. I really don't. They should have just traded him at the trade deadline, in my opinion. He hasn't been good at all. And I do think the Yankees are just, they're such a weird team. Like, you shouldn't be changing the batting order every other day in July. Like, you can't be losing 14-2 against the White Sox with Verdugo as your leadoff man. And I don't even know why he's leading off. He hasn't, I think he's overrated as well and really hasn't. He's kind of had a down year, and he he was 4-2 in the games he let off, but you can't be getting blown out by the White Sox. Like, that's just because you're the Yankees, you can't be losing like that, you know?
Yeah, and part of that loss was Luis Gil was the starter, a guy who's been, borderline Cy Young race for most of the year, and as of late, he's really cooled off and did so in a big way there on the South side. And now, after his last start, he got pulled after 3 innings last night, and he's hitting the 15-day IL. That news just came out with a back strain. I mean, that's a huge blow to their rotation, which is grasping for consistency at this point in the season, where everything else is inconsistent, as we've already touched upon, right? The bats are inconsistent, the bullpen's inconsistent. That's a massive injury. Same thing can be said for Jazz Chisholm, who went down last week. He should be back soon. He said that he was going to come back as soon as his 10-day stint was over. So hopefully he'll be healthy and good to go in a few days, and they're going to need him because, guys, the Yankees have lost their past 2 games, and both of which were against lefty starters. And that brings them to 13-20 on the year against lefties, whereas they are 60-33 versus righties. This is a team that it doesn't matter how great Judge and Soto are going to be at the two and the three. I mean, I feel like I'm beating a dead horse talking about this every single time I'm on the show. It doesn't matter how great they are when your one and your four can't get on base or bring them in, and your five through your nine isn't doing anything productive either. I'm not sure if you guys have the answers, but I might as well ask, Bradley, do you see anyone in this lineup outside of Judge and Soto that you feel like can be an impact player going down the stretch for them, maybe in that one or that four spot or really anywhere in the order?
I mean, as much as I want to say Austin Wells can maybe be the cleanup man, I don't know, honestly. I just don't see outside of Judge really anybody that can that has stepped up really. Like, I just don't have an answer
I
for
mean,
you
if you
really.
told me we'd be having that conversation about Austin Wells as the cleanup man for the Yankees for the season, as a Red Sox fan, I'd be stoked. That would mean that they're terrible. But somehow they are one of the best teams in the league, despite having this predicament. It's actually incredible. And it's thanks to Judge and Soto both being, probably 1-2 or 1-3 in the MVP race. Obviously you got to mention Bobby Witt there. But I mean, they have been just tremendous. And really elsewhere, it's been a struggle. And another guy I want to talk about, DJ LeMahieu. They've needed him to step up a little bit in the past few weeks. Jazz just went down. They have John Birdie, who was out and is coming back soon. When a guy like Birdie and also Jazz come back, where does LeMahieu even fit in, Lauren? Is he a guy that really makes sense to even stay rostered going into this playoff break or playoff run? I mean, he's been maybe the worst hitter in baseball. He's up to what, 35 years old. He's got 2 years left on his deal. Do you think that there's any place for LeMahieu on this roster going into the postseason?
I do not. I don't even think there's a place for him on this lineup today. I don't like him at first base. I wish Ben Rice was our starting first baseman since Anthony Rizzo went down. I like Ben Rice. He's a lefty. He hits well against both righties and lefties. I don't know why Aaron Boone does not start him anymore. And I know LeMahieu kind of bounced back this past week. He had a lot of RBIs. He helped the team out when they needed him. But his average is still 194 or around there. I don't know what happened the past game or two.
I went 0 for
That's
5.
just, oh, sorry. Which is still horrendously bad. And I don't like him on the team. I like his defense. I think he's good at first base. But again, I think Ben Rice could offer the same exact amount of talent on the defensive side and even more on the offensive side. And then, like you said, when Birdie comes back, I think he deserves to be our starting first baseman until Anthony Rizzo can prove that to us as fans and to Aaron Boone that he could step up to the plate like how he used to before his concussion last season. But until then, LeMahieu just should not be anywhere near the baseball field.
Wow, that is cutthroat. That's brutal. What do you think, Bradley?
I think I agree. They should be starting Ben Rice. I don't get why Aaron Boone is still has faith in DJ LeMay when Ben Rice is younger, better, and has more upside. I just don't understand why he hasn't been starting Ben Rice. I feel like Ben Rice should be the starting first baseman over DJ LeMay.
Yeah, it feels like a little bit of a no-brainer at this point. You want to ride the hot bat, and you also want to give a guy who's a veteran who's established himself a chance. But I feel like time and time again, even though he's come up clutch a couple times this past week, LeMahieu has proved that he's just not the guy now or in the future for this team. And while I think there is some value in keeping him around, you have a veteran presence, You have another guy who can play first, maybe third. Otherwise, I don't know, at least in the starting lineup, I just don't see come playoff time, imagining everyone's healthy, you know, including Jazz and Birdie, I just don't see him slotting into this lineup. And another thing that I wanted to touch upon before we move on to these wild card races is yesterday's game was over the 4 hour mark. This is a 12 inning game. That's the longest game in the majors all year, which is pretty absurd to think about that a 4 hour game is that long, because that felt like, you know, your average Red Sox Yankees game just a few years ago was 4 hours. And now that's the longest game in the entire league. But in a game like that, especially when you come down to the wild card race and the playoff race, something like managing your pitchers is extremely important. And we saw Heel go down after just 3 innings. Tim Hill comes in, throws two. Mark Leiter, Weaver, Canley, Holmes all pitch one. Jake Cousins throws two. Mazza and Tonkin combined for the 12th when the bullpen finally imploded. It was actually a great performance from this bullpen. They really got the job done. But now you go into a series finale, riding a 3-game losing streak, and your entire bullpen is exhausted. So it's really, when you go into this situation, it can snowball on you, where if you don't have your lineup and your starting pitching executing each day, your bullpen's getting more and more taxed, and you're heading towards the playoffs, and you have this cycle where your team gets more and more fatigued, and you're never able to really hit the reset button as things come accelerating towards the playoffs. So I think that's something to watch. Massive game against the Guardians today. I mean, this is a team that has proved a lot of naysayers wrong this year. 73 and 52 is nowhere near what the Guardians were slotted to do, and really to see them just a game behind the Yankees is pretty unfathomable. You know, given where these two teams were supposed to be at the beginning of the season. But that's the reality of the situation. And the Yankees, you know, they're a very taxed team right now, between a couple of injuries, with the lineup, with Heel going down, with their bullpen being fully exhausted yesterday in 9 innings of work against the Guardians. This is a must-win game. They're going to a must-win stretch of baseball. I mean, they just lost their grip on the number one spot in the AL East with the Orioles. And even if they were to stay in this wild card spot, if the Orioles were to overtake them for good, they just have a 3-game buoy on the Royals and the Twins and the second spot, right? So I mean, there's just not a lot of room for error, as much as you might think there is. There's really not a lot of room, and that kind of brings us to the NL wild card race, which is what I wanted to start with, because we've already talked about it a little bit with the Mets. It's pretty razor thin, and it's very deep as well, which is really interesting. The Padres and the D-backs have surged into those first and second spots, and it's hard to see them at this point slipping out of the playoff picture. The Braves have 2 games on the Mets, 1.5, and they meet one more time at the end of the season, as we saw. There's also several teams hanging right behind them. You think about the Reds, the Cardinals, the Giants, the Cubs even are still just, you know, 3 games behind the Mets or so. Do you guys see either of those teams, Bradley? Do you see any of those teams competing with the Mets and the Braves for this last spot?
Nope. I think that obviously the top five teams are locked in. As I said earlier, I think it's just a dogfight between the Braves and the Mets for that sixth spot. I just don't see any of the other teams below the Mets really catching up, because 4 games is a lot. Because not only do you have to win games, you have to expect other teams to lose games. And I just don't see the Mets losing that many games to fall back beyond seven. But I think that the sixth spot is just up for grabs between the Braves and the Mets. At the end of the day, as much as I want to say that the Mets are going to get it, I have to be realistic and say that it's possible, but not probable.
I actually have the same exact thing written down. I have it being between the Braves and the Mets. I don't think the Padres or Diamondbacks are going or they got the top two spots. But for the same reasons I said for the Mets before, they're still in the running. They know what heartbreak feels like. And same with the Braves. They both have seen their highs and the lows this season. They know what losing feels like. And neither of them are going to want to lose, obviously. No one wants to lose. It's an awful feeling. But with these two teams specifically, they know what it's like to be at the lowest point you could be at. And for that reason, I think that neither of them will allow themselves to drop to be out of the wild card running, but I do see the Braves taking it in the end.
Yeah, and for me, I like to say the Mets. Obviously, the Braves have the edge right now. I'm going to go with my heart and say that the Mets do pull this out. And yeah, I don't think that the Giants or the Cardinals or the Reds or the Cubs are going to make up those games. I mean, the Giants are just 2 games back, but then beyond that, you see 3.5 for the Cards, 4 for the Reds and the Cubs. And none of those teams have really beat expectations or put together playoff baseball. I just don't see it happening. But the Mets have been a feel-good story, and I think a similar thing could be said for a lot of these AL wild card squads, right? So you have the Yankees hovering at the first wild card spot, but then below that, you've got the Twins and the Royals tied now for the second wild card spot. All of a sudden, the Twins have really stumbled. The Royals have been pretty steady all year long. They're now tied for the second and third wild card spot. They've both been feel-good stories. Both teams have outplayed their expectations. And the same thing could be said for the team right behind them on their heels. 3 games now, the Boston Red Sox have surpassed their expectations. Those three teams fighting for 2 spots. Which 2 teams do you think make it, Bradley?
In my opinion, I think the top 6 teams in the AL are locked in. I just don't see the Royals or the Twins really taking their foot off the gas. I think they're just going to cruise through the rest of the season, and I don't think they'll drop off the playoffs. But I think Kansas City will drop to the 6th seed because they do have the second hardest remaining schedule. But other than that, as I know you're a Red Sox fan, I know it pains me to say this, but I really don't see any of the other 6 teams falling out. I'm sorry. I have to be
No,
honest.
I mean, I think that's reasonable. I mean, the Sox are a full 3 games back right now, so it would take a lot. Lauren, what do you think?
I think the exact same thing. Obviously, I'm not a Boston fan at all, but I was so impressed with them this season. They just played beyond every expectation I had for them, but they still just did not have the it factor that was gonna allow them to get into the AL playoff picture, which is, sad for this team and everything, considering how well they played with the players they had and everything. But I see the Twins and Royals staying up there, and then Yankees and Orioles. I don't know who's gonna take the title of the East yet. I'm crossing my fingers for the Yankees, obviously, but we'll see what happens there. But I have Orioles, Yankees, Twins, Kansas City as my top four.
Yeah, and I think it's a very interesting battle brewing between the Orioles and the Yankees for the AL East title, because that's probably the difference between having a bye week or a bye day and a wild card series. And that's just a massive difference, right? So that's something to watch. Of course, Twins, Royals, Sox, another matchup to watch as we head down the stretch. One more thing I wanted to touch upon before we wrap up here. This season's projecting to be the first season in a decade in which no team has won 100 games, which is pretty ludicrous to think about, right? Over the past decade, almost 3 teams, 2.75 teams per year, have achieved 100 wins, and now nobody's going to do it. No team is projected to finish above 600 for the first time in a decade. And if you just look back last year, the 2 teams who made the World Series were both wild card teams. And I'm wondering, Lauren, what are your thoughts about if this is something like a coincidence or if this is a trend we're seeing where there's more parity in the league and it's harder to win 100 games? Why do you think this is that we're having such even results across the league this year?
I think it's just an even amount of power players on every single winning team. There's athletes that scare pitchers, there's pitchers that scare batters on every single one of these teams that are in the running. And I can't really remember a time where every single team had one to two insane hitters and then a great starter pitcher and a great bullpen as well. And that's just kind of weird to think about how that played out this season, how even it is. But I think it's really cool and makes it for a really fun playoff prediction.
Yeah, I definitely agree. The fact that no team is projected to get 100 games, honestly, it was surprising to me. Obviously, you expect the Dodgers to get 105 wins and be the best team by far, but it just shows the amount of competition in the league. Just it's more fun when every team is like so close, like one loss can like drop you 2 spots, and, everything is just like so close instead of being like one clear-cut favorite. Because if there's one or two favorites, it makes baseball boring just to see. One loss can drop you out of the playoffs, and one win can get you into the playoffs. It just shows that there's more competition now that than there's ever been in baseball. Now is just baseball's back. The fact that all these teams are so close to each other, like realistically, any team in the playoff running right now can make the World Series, and you know.
I mean, that's the beauty of it, right? Just a few years back, it wasn't like that. It was, the best 2 to 4 teams were the teams that you expect to see in the World Series, and that's always how it is. And I think that's a similar thing in virtually any other league. The NFL see the Chiefs in the Super Bowl every year. The NBA, the Celtics were supposed to win the title last year, and they did. And I think there's a lot less parity in those leagues than there is in the MLB today. And you have a situation brewing where a team like the Mets could, sneak into the playoffs and then make a World Series run. We saw it with the Braves a few years ago. We just saw the D-backs and the Rangers do the same thing. And I think that's a beautiful thing for the sport. And I think that that's a very optimistic note that we can end this thing on. So I'd like to thank you all for tuning in. Postseason baseball just beyond the horizon. We've got a long way to go until then. So until next week, for Lauren Mondarulli and Bradley Byrne, I'm Joe Henry saying so long. Nosebleeds is a production of WFUV Sports.
Thank you.